Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Being too busy was just feeling like a really empty excuse. If there was such a burning subconscious desire at the time, like all throughout my life, that what does art mean to me? I draw all the time, I've painted, I've taken a couple of evening classes, but what does it really mean to me? And am I going to pursue this in some form or another, or am I going to let it go and not just think about it as something that could have been, you know, in my life? I just didn't want that.
I have a very special guest on the Artist Mother podcast today, Pooja Pitti. Raised in Mumbai, India, Pooja trained as an accountant and moved to the US in 1999. She earned an MBA from the University of Chicago Booth School of Business, which led her to a career in finance and entrepreneurship. A long-held practice in self-study in painting was always apparent, and in 2016, she decided to pursue her passion and shifted her focus to painting full-time. Pooja has an incurable and progressive form of muscular dystrophy, and her painting process explores the constantly changing relationship between an often slow body and an active mind. Pooja is an alumna of the Hatch Residency at Chicago Artists Coalition and the Center Program at Hyde Park Art Center. As a board member of both organizations, she is an advocate for equity and accessibility in the arts. Pooja has been nominated for the Three Arts Visual Art Award and the Joan Mitchell Foundation Painter and Sculptors Grant. Her paintings have been exhibited at venues such as Art Miami, Expo Chicago, and the Union League Club of Chicago, and she is in numerous private collections across the country. Pooja is represented by the McCormick Gallery in Chicago. Welcome, Pooja, to the Artist Mother podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here and talk to you today.
Thank you. Have you ever done an interview about art and motherhood before?
No, not specifically focusing on that. So I'm very excited to talk about the intersection between the two today.
Awesome, Pooja. I feel like we have a lot to talk about. I can't wait to dig in. So why don't you start by telling me a little bit about your childhood, and if there's anything that you feel like is a memory or, you know, something about the way you were raised that kind of connects to your life as an artist today?
Yeah, I grew up in Mumbai, India, and I've always carried a sketchbook around. So I loved drawing. I've drawn since I was a kid, but art was just always considered to be a hobby, you know, so academics and extracurricular activities. And being around, I grew up in a business family too. So It was always the sense that art would be a good hobby to have. But If you want to be an independent woman, an independent adult, then you better have a career that can make you financially independent. And you know, I always say that unfortunately, I was really good at taking exams and did well at school. So I just kept going down this path of academically what's, you know, just people around me encouraged me. And of course, I myself too, you know, wanted to do well at school and get a higher education and not just be a girl who would get married at the age of 18 and not have her own identity. So I think from a very young age, I knew I wanted that independence, both financial and also as an identity of my own. But drawing has just been a real constant. And also while pursuing my studies, it was always I would just try to do as much creative stuff as I could. Mm-hmm. I would say that drawing is something that really from childhood to now when I've become an artist, it's something that is a continuous thread in my life.
Mm, I love that. And even when you weren't necessarily thinking of making art a career, it was still a part of your life. I like that kind of, just the idea of it more being a constant part of your identity rather than being a focal point for your career for a time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It took me a while to figure out, to actually become, I keep saying become, and when I write it, I put it in quotes because, becoming an artist was really, I was 39 mm-hmm. and it's been such an important part of my journey so far to just accept that about myself. But obviously when I look back, I can see that it was always there.
Can you tell me about that decision making? Like, was it a day? Was it a minute? Was it kind of something that was eating away at you over years and you finally like how did you kind of get to that point of, okay, enough is enough?
Yeah. When I look back at it, it does seem like it was kind of a leap, but I know that it wasn't. It was really small baby steps mm-hmm. that led to this current career that I have. But, we were talking about, since this is about motherhood, actually, when I found out I was pregnant, I had applied to business schools. I was all set to, get my MBA. I was running a business of my own already. I was 25 years old. And when I found out I was pregnant, I seriously thought about abandoning that path and going to art school. Mm. So it felt at the time that, is my identity now just going to be a mother? Like I've already been daughter, a wife. mm-hmm. Now I'm going to be a mother. So I think just that idea of, or the reality of, that I'm going to have a baby. I remember very seriously considering art school. And then for many reasons, including the lack of support from my then family, I decided not to do it. But a few years ago, so this was 2015, and yes, so on and off, I've always wondered what would it be like to go to art school? And also for me, the only way to be an artist was, well, you have to go to school and study, mm-hmm. just like I did for, becoming an accountant or a businesswoman or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I knew as my disability was progressing, it was just giving me, again, forcing me to evaluate where I want to spend this very limited resource of energy that I have. And since it had really been something that I had wondered about for so long, I decided that, being too busy was just feeling like a really empty excuse if there was such a burning subconscious desire at the time, like all throughout my life, that what does art mean to me? I draw all the time. I've painted. I've taken a couple of evening classes. But what does it really mean to me? And am I going to pursue this in some form or another? Or am I going to let it go and not just think about it as something that could have been, mm-hmm. in my life? I just didn't want that. Mm. And I figured I would just make a very small commitment to draw a little bit, 20 minutes every day. Doesn't have to be longer than that. And I started doing that, just sitting on the couch in the evenings at night before going to bed. And it was amazing that little practice in just a few weeks, I knew I was doing it every day. I was really enjoying it. And I remember pulling out my watercolors and going to the dining table and being like, okay, I'm going to bring some color into this. And eventually moving into the home office, pushing aside some of the work stuff and setting up a small easel and making a painting. And so it was a very, very organic process. It kind of happened over a few months and just really took off from there. Commitment was,
yeah. And just kind of thinking about how the different like major life changes that you've gone through maybe have been, you know, a part of that transition and kind of finding your identity or maybe leaning into, you know, this new identity that you wanted to pursue a little bit more. I really like thinking about that.
And not putting so much pressure on myself thinking, well, does it have to be a career right away? Do I have to feel overwhelmed by the thought of, oh, wait, I'm going to just start a whole new career in my mid to late 30s? Like, no, I just need to create with some kind of regularity.
But then you did eventually choose to go full time with your practice, right?
Yes.
In 2016.
Yes.
About 5 years ago, you kind of made the commitment. Was that more because the demand was there? Like your career kind of started to grow and there was momentum that picked up and you felt like you needed to do it? Or was it more like, you know what, I'm just going to do this and I'm going to put everything I have into building it?
I would say it's more of the latter because in 2016, I'd been accepted into a couple of programs as the Hatch residency at Chicago Artists Coalition. And I think I had been accepted in 2016, but hadn't really started the program yet or shown my work really. But so it wasn't about demand at that point. It was a feeling of just realizing that I can make art without going to art school, and I can make art every day and not get bored of it. And I want to make more and more art. And it just felt like it was the most authentic way to live my life. That became quite clear, you know, very quickly. And I just didn't want to have, I didn't want to have any kind of, you know, baggage, if you will, from the work I was doing before or the business I was running. I wanted to go all in. And
I love that. How old was your kid at that time?
So 2016, so he was around 13. Yeah. Okay. He just turned 18 this year.
Crazy.
last year, sorry. Not this year. Last year. Yeah.
Okay, Pooja, can you describe what your art looks like, maybe for somebody who has not yet seen the work? I want to hear a little bit about your, you know, some of the materials you work with and your process. You've talked a lot about drawing, but interested to kind of see how that translates to painting.
Yeah, you know, drawing's been like this constant, and painting as a practice is fairly recent, I would say. I think I made my first kind of acrylic painting in 2015. So when I started the daily drawing practice and then did some watercolors and gouache and then pulled out a canvas and some acrylic paint. I had dabbled in oil before and made a few paintings a few years before that. But, you know, having a young child at home and living downtown Chicago in an apartment, I used to worry about ventilation and things like that. So now I make, I would say my painting practice, it's about, I make colorful abstract paintings. My process is based on color and movement. So a painting, the starting point for a painting is pretty much always color, and what kind of color palette or color temperature or saturation. You know, those are some of the things that I think about when I'm working on a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And the process itself is based on different types of movement. So, you know, with my disability, as it's progressing, and I'm really trying to capture this very quick and big energy mm-hmm. onto the canvas.
Mm-hmm.
And so usually starting with pretty thinned out paint that can just be applied in drips or big gestural kind of brush strokes, just to capture that sense of movement. And recently with the pandemic, I kind of went back to drawing a lot. And so I'm getting the kind of slow movement or the still part, the stillness part of my practice. That's captured more in the drawings because I do them when I'm tired, too tired to paint.
Mm.
So the paintings are, I would say, more about that energy, like made in a period of when I'm feeling energetic, when I'm feeling active, when my body's not too tired. So I'm hoping to convey all that quick and big energy through the painting. And color is obviously, for me, a great way to show that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're abstract paintings. They're not representative of anything. And the process is pretty intuitive.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in your bio that I read at the beginning, you talked about how your painting process explores the constantly changing relationship between an often slow body and an active mind.
Yeah.
Could you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah. And, you know, this part about body and mind and treating mm-hmm. them as two separate entities, if you will, my practice is that part is kind of changing in my practice as we speak a little bit. So up until last year, the process of painting was very similar to what I described, but when I was feeling tired and I couldn't make these large movements, I would sit with a painting for hours and apply really small dots mm-hmm. over the canvas. And in the beginning, when I was doing that, it kind of felt like that represents the, you know, it was a way of slowing down my mind because mm-hmm. the body is getting tired, but the mind is still rushing around and wants to do more and more. And then when the pandemic started and I started making these really small drawings, I now spend hours making those drawings. And I think the color relationships are still there between the drawing and painting. They do mm-hmm. influence each other a lot. But I'm not spending those long hours in the studio applying smaller marks to the paintings. So for me as a practice, just constantly thinking about what the movement means between body and mind, I think that influences the way I apply paint or the way I stitch on a drawing. And
oh, you stitch on drawings too?
Yeah, so the drawings that I make are very much connected to textile and fiber materials. So I'll draw with color pencils or watercolor, and I've been manipulating all these handmade papers and kind of crumpling them and then stitching on top of them and things. Yeah.
Beautiful. That's awesome. I definitely love sort of the transition that I'm seeing in your work. Kind of, if you look through on your website, the paintings, you know, from each year, you kind of can see that more smaller mark and like the more meditative practice. And mm-hmm. then the more recent work, there's more like openness and gesture, I feel mm-hmm. like, And like, there's almost a centering, it looks like, that's happening to the work visually. Like there's this relationship to, or consideration for, I don't don't know, something sort of central in a lot of these more recent paintings. I don't know if that's intentional or just something you're thinking about composition wise. But it feels like there's like this more centralized shape that is continually sort of being revealed and then covered up and revealed and then covered up kind of in some of these recent works, which is really lovely.
That's so interesting because someone else used that term with me recently too. So no, not really intentional, but it could just be with, you know, this almost not exactly circular, but just using my arm mm-hmm. more in like big movements and then mm-hmm. working on top of that. So maybe there's some of that coming through.
Yeah.
But no, I don't make any kind of sketches in advance or think about composition before I'm working. It's just, I'll do something really trying to lose myself in the flow and movement when I'm painting, and then stepping back, looking at it, and then seeing what I want to draw out and what I want to cover up. And it's just many, many layers.
Mm. So beautiful. And your like the color relationships that you're kind of playing with are just so visually striking. I love Nothing Gold Can Stay.
Yeah.
And
that's a bold piece. Yeah.
It is. I love it. And What We Remember, What Gets Forgotten is a beautiful piece too.
Thank you.
Well, they're all beautiful, but I like those in particular. Obviously, there's some Joan Mitchell, adoration going on, I think, here.
Completely.
Yeah, like that, yeah. You know, and I know she's a big name sort of in the abstract, you know, gestural painting lineage for women especially, but I think it goes beyond that in these works.
Yeah, it's, I just love everything about her, and it's mm-hmm. even, you know, the romanticized version and then the work as well, and her connection to Chicago and how she lived her life, everything.
Yeah, and you got a nomination for the Joan Mitchell Foundation grant, which is amazing. Yes. I bet that was so exciting.
That was very, very exciting. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Hi, I'm Mindy Whittock with the Artist Mother team. I wanted to take a moment to share about our Artist Mother Network. You have listened to the podcast and maybe follow along on Instagram, finding support and validation as an artist mother on these platforms. We have a space that offers a more personal experience in the Artist Mother community. Come join our Artist Mother Network, a place where more tangible friendships are created and resources for you as an artist and a mother are abundant. On the network, you will find groups to support your interests, like the Single Mothers Group. Through these subsets, I have personally found forever friends and strength in the wisdom and support of other women. Our network offers free artist talks on so many different topics. Jody Hayes recently gave us a tour of her studio and how she keeps her art life organized. We also have one workshop by an artist a month, offered to you for free with your membership. Tara Carpenter Estrada just walked our members through a trace monotype printing workshop that was so fun. All of our workshops and artist talks are recorded and saved on the network, so you can access them if you aren't able to attend live. I also co-host the morning show with Kaylin Butine. We start Monday mornings in community with you talking about topics deeply relatable in our artist mother identities. We have recently discussed how we can be fearless in our studios, what bravery looks like as an artist, and have shared in vulnerability and what makes us afraid. These morning shows are the best way to start the week. Please don't miss out on this opportunity to connect with us on a deeper level. Our network offers an affordable membership of $11 a month or $121 a year, and your first 2 months are free. This gives you access to our artist talks, workshops, morning show, exhibition opportunities, a growing resource library for artist mothers, and many support groups with other network members based on location and interests. The network also provides you the opportunity to take part in our leadership training so that you may become an artist mother community host in your own geographical area. The network has been such a wonderful source of friendship, community, and artist resources. I am so proud to be part of this Artist Mother world and am grateful I get to share it with you. I look forward to getting to know your magical self. I will see you on the network. You can find all the information you need to join on our website at artistmotherpodcast.com.
Okay, Pooja, let's talk a little bit about just the relationship between art and motherhood for you. I love that you kind of had this experience of, you know, I already have a career, I already am a mother, and I'm just going to make this decision and become an artist. I think it's interesting, though, that you did say that you kind of felt like when you had your kid initially, that something opened up for you in like wanting to be more involved in your art career. And I wonder what do you think that was? Like, why do you, I don't know, just like, what are you thinking about sort of the relationship between your identity as an artist and a mother?
I think it was, you know, back then it was about feeling that I've got all these different identities and I've worked really hard to be all of these different things to different people and to myself. And when you add something like motherhood, which is, you know, you can see how all consuming it can be, and it is, especially in the beginning. And I think it was just a sense of, well, why am I ignoring this other thing in me related to art? Like, what's stopping me from doing that? How can I balance everything else? But for some reason, there's a block or a fear or not enough support for this particular identity. You know, it was, I think it was something along those lines. And I think, so this was when I was pregnant, because once I had my son, I didn't have time to think about anything. I mean, I had him. He was 10 months old when I moved to Chicago to get my full-time MBA. It was a crazy time. I really did not have time to think about identities or art or anything, you know. So I think that's what that was.
Yeah.
When I was questioning. When I found out I was pregnant.
Yeah. And what has your son kind of thought of this big career shift for you? Like, has he been involved or, you know, is it a part of sort of your family life, I guess?
Yeah, it really is. And it's been very special to have, you know, he was a teenager already, and just going through this whole transition with him, being able to understand what was going on. And we've talked about it several times. And, you know, his dad and I divorced when he was just over 2 years old.
Okay.
So him being an only child, and then I remarried. So, you know, my husband also now, we got married about 9 years ago.
Okay.
So my family's seen a lot of this, like they've seen this really big change happening. And sharing that with my son just firsthand and just talking about it. I mean, he, from a very young age, has been quite an art critic for me, you know. So with kids, it's so nice because they're going through, every kid draws and stuff in school, you know. And so just sharing that without, well, I wasn't really practicing art or anything, but he loves drawing too. His sense of drawing is very, very different from mine. He's very logical and precise. And so, but he's always loved to draw, just loved to draw. And so when I saw that in him as a little child, it was very exciting. And, you know, he's chosen the path of science and math and technology, but he draws a lot, but it's in CAD. So he'll design 3D models and things, but, you know, it's definitely been something that's connected us. It's been a point of bonding. It's been Lots of teachable moments of like telling him that, you know, just showing to him that it doesn't matter if you study something else and want to be something else later, or maybe you should kind of, you know, respect any talents that you think you may have and develop them. Maybe that's a way of finding purpose in life.
Mm-hmm. Or just accepting that, you know, we are humans and we're complex and we might have a lot of passions that we want to pursue, you know?
Yeah.
And there might be different seasons for those things. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I knew that I couldn't go to art school when my son was 3 years old and I was a single mom. I had a job, and the focus and the priorities were different. But I was trying to make time to take some classes and have, you know, make some painting. So he saw that too, but he was really young then. But the recent transition to a full-time art career, he's very much been a part of that. So being able to, you know, taking him to see my first show, or bringing him into the studio and saying, okay, something's not working with this painting. What do you think it might be?
I love that so much. Yes. You're giving me hope for the future, because, you know, right now my kids are just, you know, just obstacles to my studio practice. So, well, I shouldn't. Well, I can say that. I don't have to feel bad about saying that. No, they are. They really are obstacles to my practice.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's very difficult. And, you know, of course, like, people do amazing things. And I've seen some on the Artist Mother Instagram, where they're working constantly with kids. And it, you know, it makes me, it just amazes me, because I can't imagine myself doing that back then, you know.
Yeah. And no shame in either way, and no hierarchy. Just we, you know, we really have to kind of lean into what works best for us, you know.
And exactly.
Yeah. In this season, I want studio time away, like to be my own, you know?
Yes.
So anyway, Pooja, let's talk a little bit about like the community that you have where you are in Chicago. I'm curious to know, you know, kind of as you were making this leap, like I imagine that a lot of your peers and friends were built sort of around, you know, your career in finance. And so just wondering about kind of, you know, you've talked about how that transition affected your family and how your kid and your husband have been a part of that. But I'm also curious a little bit about the community that you have, and kind of how you've, you know, built up or engaged with community in transition. Yeah, just wondering if you have any good artist mother friends where you live.
You know, I knew, once I knew that this is what I want to do, it's only natural that some of my previous training as a businesswoman or being an entrepreneur, and how do you just, you know, do things when you have an idea, how do you make them into something tangible? I knew that finding a community, because I had not been to art school, would be really important. And that's why I approached places like Chicago Artists Coalition, Hyde Park Arts Center, and just drummed up the courage to apply to their programs. It was because I was really craving that community of art, right? Artists, curators, art administrators, just things to do around art, which my friends and community from before, yes, you're right, it was very much centered around, you know, I went to business school in Chicago, so the network was all related to that pretty much. And the understanding of art in that community was very different from what I wanted. I didn't want to look at it as a business that I'm doing or a new thing I'm starting where I need to immediately figure out how to monetize it, you know. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to stay away from those conversations in the beginning. And so I would say that going through the programs and the residencies that both these organizations offer have just been tremendously valuable for me in finding my community here in Chicago. Yeah.
Okay. So you said this little nugget in there about not wanting to monetize your practice in the beginning. And I want to hear you talk about that a little bit, just because I feel like, you know, there are a lot of emerging artists who I think don't always see the value in what they're doing unless that monetization is there. And so when, you know, they're more emerging and haven't really built up their practice or their client base, like it's really a struggle in this constant like spiral of my work isn't good enough. It's not selling. My work isn't good enough. And especially for artist mothers who feel like they can't, they never have enough time. And so they're kind of like trying to fill this void of justifying their time in the studio with the fact that, well, I should be earning money from this. I can't be taking energy away from my family. I need to be, you know, like there's this, like this constant pressure. I feel like that a lot of women in our community kind of put themselves through. And so I would love to hear you just, you know, your own perspective on that, like why you wanted to kind of put up some boundaries and not monetize it right away. And then, you know, now I know you do make a lot of money from your paintings and you, you do sell them. And so I kind of want to hear a little bit about that journey, if you're willing to share.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I just don't buy into the starving artist concept or that you need to suffer poverty and pain to make art. So that obviously is a big thing. And also, it's not my story. You know, I come from a business background. I am trained in entrepreneurship and I've set up new companies. I've seen my family start businesses from nothing and make them into something. And I was talking earlier about how financial independence would be so important to live independently in other areas of my life. You know, that's just the way the world works. And I always wanted that. And so when I was talking about not monetizing it in the beginning, what I meant was, since I'd not established a practice, right? I'd made art, I'd made drawings, I'd done creative projects, I'd made a few paintings, but it was not an artistic practice. And I didn't want, I just wanted to protect myself from, you know, these ideas of, okay, if you want to be an artist and have a career, then this is how you should approach it, because these are the kinds of things that sell or are marketable, or there's a gallery here that specializes in this, and maybe my friend of a friend knows someone there, or, you know, just everything that I had learned about setting up a business, I kind of wanted to just unlearn that and have time in the studio to just make art. Well, I didn't even have a studio, but in my creative space, just creating that space where I didn't want those concerns. I'm not saying that they were not concerns. I don't think, you know, yes, I was privileged enough to not have to earn money from the art right away. Like I had the freedom to just make art and not worry about that. And I know a lot of people can't do that. So, you know, everyone's journey and everyone's story and everyone's expectations around earning a living are different. But I think just like anything else in the world, whether you need the money or not, if you're making something and you want to sell it, you should never have to justify why you're doing that. And deriving value from selling a work, of course, it's incredibly validating, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody's actually paying to buy this thing you've created. And I think that should be celebrated. Mm-hmm. And I think artists should be encouraged to, always think about doing that. It is a balance. It is definitely a balance. Once you start selling to, do you get into this thing where you're only painting what sells? Mm-hmm. That's a thing. When I stopped painting the dots on the painting, because for 3 years I'd been doing that, and people would talk about that as, we can recognize Pooja's work because we see these little dots painted mm-hmm. on top of these brush strokes. And then I just had, my show's up now. And when I was making work for that, I was like, there's not a single dot to be seen on these paintings. Mm-hmm. But I just knew that I didn't want to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you take risks still. And it's not a predictable business or a market. Like, you may sell a lot of paintings 1 year and then not sell anything next year, right?
Beautiful.
Yeah, so I think we have to define for ourselves where we find value in our work. And selling it is one of them. And it's an important part for sure.
And every artist's, you know, path is going to look different. Like you said, every person's definition of value is different. And I think the hardest part is kind of really looking inward for that answer, you know,
yes.
And not looking outward.
Yes.
Yeah. It takes a lot of work and introspection and, you know, kind of patience, I think.
Yeah. And everything that's come before you, when you find yourself having to make those decisions, then what has come before that, right? Mm-hmm. What's brought you to that point where you're thinking about that?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of self-awareness and also standing up for yourself and convincing people around you, I mean, you know, that no, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thrilled to partner with our new sponsor, Cozy, to tell you more about this incredible app. Cozy is an app that specializes in keeping busy families organized. It's an app designed for multiple users to help you and your spouse, partner, or caretakers juggle school schedules, practices, meetings, doctor's appointments, and more. Cozy tracks everyone's schedules and events in one place with a shared color-coded calendar. A feature I love is the app reminds others about your family's events so that you don't have to be the one who does that. It's easy to get started. You can even pull in events from your family's existing personal work and school calendars. You can have Cozy send everyone in your family a weekly or a daily email that shares your agenda. And I personally love the meal planning section. You can create a shared grocery list that lets the whole family add items in real time. So you'll never find yourself at the store without the list. Not that that's happened to you, but it's happened with me before. That list is always on your phone and it's up to date. If you need help figuring out dinner, there's even a place to store recipes and plan meals ahead. The best part? Cozy is free. Just download Cozy, C-O-Z-I, the Family Organizer app from your app store. That's Cozy, C-O-Z-I, and get the free app today. Visit your phone's app store or Google Play to download Cozy today. Start feeling more organized and keep your family communications simple this season. Thank you so much, Cozy, for sponsoring the Artist Mother podcast. So, as you kind of have progressed on this journey of, you know, being a full-time artist and committing to your practice and making a living off your work, could you talk a little bit about some of the like tangible steps that you took to put yourself out there and to start to sell more of your work? I know you're currently represented by a gallery in Chicago.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of wondering about, you know, that
that tender time in the studio that you talked about of protecting that initial phase and not putting the pressure on, but then, you know, sort of taking the steps towards where you are now. I'm wondering if you could, I don't know, just give some insight into what were some of those big moves that you, you know, sort of took to bridge that gap.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of compartmentalization involved, like there has been in many aspects of my life. But I think, you know, treating the time at the easel as sacred and being free from outside expectations, very important, not always successful. Obviously, how can you stop your mind from thinking like, oh, I sold 3 red paintings. Should the fourth one be a red one too?
Yes.
You know, it's, but you can do it. It's easy to do in the creative field, I would say, more than in anything else. It can be, you can make some rules for yourself and really try to focus on what you're creating. I mean, that's, I'm not going to get into that. Everyone's creative process is different, but, going back to, yes, so outside of making the work, I think my previous training obviously helped me a lot, you know, and I've grown up in an entrepreneurial family. I think it's just in my blood. So I always thought that I would treat this very professionally, right? So whether that means small things like replying to people on time, following up on inquiries, being smart about how am I pricing my work, just knowing when there is an opportunity and someone asks you, say, for a commission, which is maybe not right away in your comfort zone, but then figuring it out, like they have a space. And say, I remember one of my early commissions was from a friend who needed a really large piece of artwork for his office. And I'd never painted something so huge before, and it was very intimidating, but I put together a whole series of very small canvases and shipped them out to him, you know, and it worked. So it was a combination of problem solving and keeping your mind open and saying, okay, you know, there is an opportunity here to earn something. And for my art to be seen by someone else outside of the studio. So I think, you know, being conscious and aware of these opportunities, following up with people, it's so uncomfortable to follow up with people, I think, even now. You know, someone reaches out and then you offer all this information and then you don't hear back. So what is a gracious way to follow up and not, you know, become a pest?
Self-promotion is hard.
And then, you know, being represented by a gallery does have a lot of advantages on that end, especially if we're talking about selling art. But it's not like once a gallery signs you on and then you can just sit back and paint and not, I mean, I don't mean to make painting sound so easy. I'm just saying like, there's still stuff you need to keep doing in terms of self-promotion and talking about the work, learning how to talk about your work.
What are some ways you've done that since, you know, I think a lot of people, like that would be, I feel like my biggest takeaway from grad school is I learned how to talk about art and about my own practice. So I'm curious to hear some ways that you have really leaned into that and honed up that skill for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very big point of insecurity for me often. Because I feel like I just lack the vocabulary. Like I wish I had had more practice. I wish I'd been taught how to talk about my work and even other people's work. Like sometimes I don't have the words, right? Or the knowledge of what's come before me, learning about art history and being able to place your work and other people's work and in relation to what's come before. Mm-hmm. And
I still feel that way, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's just been taking advantage of every opportunity I've had and just keep on practicing and trying not to use big words that trying not to use jargon and trying to just stay again authentic to who I am and just trying to speak about my work in very simple language. I think I've in the beginning just, you know, when you apply to things, it's annoying, but it forces you to write about your work, about, like, oh my God, writing artist statements. How excruciating is that? I hate it. It's always like, oh my God, how am I going to explain everything? There's so much to talk about.
Right.
But it's just practicing, doing it more and more.
Yes. And just, yeah, like you mentioned, putting yourself out there and taking the opportunities that come your way, you know?
Yeah. Not stressing too much if I misspeak or something doesn't go well. It's like, okay, fine. You know, at the end of the day, I'm not a writer or an orator. I'm a painter. So,
Yeah. But I mean, I do really feel like everyone needs to know how to talk about their own work a little bit, you know?
Sure.
Like we don't live in, you know, that we're not on an island here. Like we're not, like, to me, it's very old guard to kind of assume that the only job you have is to make the work and the world just has to interpret it. Like I really appreciate what you're saying about, like, just kind of putting the time and effort into trying your best to understand why you're making what you're making and put some language to it. Cause I think, I don't know, that feels, you know, like an extension of your practice in wanting to have it be in conversation with other people, you know?
Definitely. And, you know, I was just talking about relaxing a little bit if things don't go well, because if you're not used to talking about your work and you didn't do a perfect job, like if things didn't go according, that's what I meant. I absolutely think 100% artists should be, a bit more professional in their practice and the way they're presenting themselves and their work, because they are connected to the work. And then, if you do, however you want to define success, obviously is up to you. And I think a lot of artists do want to show their work and sell their work. And so if you want those things, then I think you need to be able to present it. You know, and it's a work in process. It doesn't have to be like a fixed thing. If you've submitted an artist statement somewhere and you don't like it, you can always change it for the next submission. If it's on your website, you can edit it. Sometimes I like wake up early in the morning and just change like one word on my website. I'm like, I went to bed thinking this wasn't right. Like something doesn't feel right about this. So, you know, but you know, it's
strange. I hope no one's looking at 5 a.m.
Yeah, but it's strange. Sometimes I wouldn't realize, wait a minute, I can just change this. You know?
Right.
It seems like, oh, we've spent all these hours. We've shown it to other people for feedback. It's at a good place now. And so it's done. But if your art is changing, then how you talk about your art will keep changing.
I think that's just a personal thing that I've been learning in the past 5 years, is that it's okay to change, you know?
Yeah.
Like I think I carry, I don't know, some like guilt or shame around like this idea of, I need to figure out what I'm going to do with my life and like stick to, you know, that's my thing, you know? I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't know if I'll be doing this in 10 years, you know, or 5 years, like, and I hope if I have made a change, it's because I'm learning more about who I am and what, you know, what is sort of my true path and my true calling in the world, even though I already feel like I'm doing that. But it's like, I only want to move towards that, I guess, on my journey, you know, and that will probably involve some change along the way.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you may be doing something completely different or a different version of what you're currently doing. And I think if we don't have to worry about that, because a lot of it is about, you know, opportunities come, circumstances change, things open up, things close up. And throughout life, you have to keep making decisions. And like, I hope that in some form or another, I'll just keep making art for the rest of my life.
Yes.
But I don't know if there'll be paintings on canvas. Will I be drawing really small drawings? Will my disease be cured and I'll be making larger paintings? I don't know.
Yes. Let's hope for that.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, who knows?
Yes. Okay, just a couple more questions and then we'll wrap up, Pooja.
Sure.
I would love to hear a little bit about just kind of like either a day in your life or maybe a week in your life, kind of how you structure, you know, your life as an artist and your art practice and, you know, kind of the admin and all of the things that go into your art career. I kind of want like a picture of how you structure your time around those things.
Yeah. So, flexibility and adaptability are my friends. I really, given my disability needs, I need to have as much flexibility as possible. And this is a very, it's a big struggle for me mentally, and something that I think I'll always keep working on is not, you know, just figuring out like, okay, I need to do 10 things, but I'm only going to be able to do one today. And the rest is just going to have to wait. I really try hard to prioritize art making. So when I'm feeling energetic, just knowing in the morning, when I wake up, is it like, you know, is it an energetic morning, or am I too tired from the days and weeks before and I need to focus on something else? Or sometimes not make art and not do any admin and just rest, you know. So for me personally, that is my life struggle, like just figuring out where my body is on that day. And of course, I have commitments and things, and I'm able to push myself to do those. I really try hard to not cram too many things in, just to allow for that unpredictability. But I would say painting in the studio, the time spent painting in the studio is kind of decreasing a little bit. Or I should say, I would spend long hours in the studio up until even like last year. And now I'm finding that I need to spend shorter, like, you know, it's like in shorter bursts of energy painting. But then I'm spending many, many hours. So like late afternoon till I go to bed, I'm surrounded by my papers and yarn and thread and color pencils and watercolor. So it's very exciting that I found something that's a daily practice and I can do even when I'm tired. All the admin stuff, I try to schedule calls and things. I try to bunch them up so that I can just take care of, you know, the business part of things together and just be in that mindset, so it's not interfering with the creative process much.
Yes.
I find that helpful for myself.
I do that too.
Yeah.
Let studio time be studio time.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember earlier, I would just block out large chunks of time on the calendar so that I wouldn't just be tempted to schedule something just because there was this, you know, 3-hour time available. So I still try to do that. But yeah, there's some reading time, there's watching TV time, doing nothing time is very important.
Yeah, it's good for your brain, right?
Yeah, my husband is often like, how can you just sit there and not do anything? Like, what are you thinking about? I was like, I don't know, I'm just sitting here.
I'm letting my brain rest.
Yeah.
Oh, I have loved talking to you, Pooja. You brought up actually the definition of success, and you talked about it in relationship to just wanting to make work for a long time. I was wondering if you wanted to elaborate on that anymore and just talk, you know, just talk a little bit more about like what is sort of your vision for your life? Like what is, you know, a successful life to you?
I think it is just carrying on making art in whatever circumstances. So as my disability progresses, I do worry about that. Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of art will I make? It's scary to think about. I increasingly need more help in the studio, and the way I use my body is changing. And it's not just in the studio, obviously, it's like in other parts of my life too. But you know, I think if I continue to embrace those changes and still figure out a way to regularly make art, and regular might not mean daily in the future, I don't know. You know, right now I make art every day. But if it's not daily, maybe it'll be another, you know, maybe it'll be weekly. I don't know. But if I'm able to embrace those uncertainties and continue to make art in some form or another, that's how I'm defining life success. But then, you know, I try to have a few goals for myself that are shorter term than thinking about my entire life.
Tell me a few short-term goals.
For now, this relationship between the drawings that I'm doing and painting, I'm trying to tease that out a bit more and just trying to understand how they relate to one another. That's what I'm interested in over the next few months. So I was working for this show recently, which was focused on paintings, but I've also shown a few drawings, and I'm having conversations with people who are visiting the show about how, you know, they relate. So I want to dig deeper into that.
Beautiful. All right, Pooja, I always close with five final questions just for us to get to know you a little bit better. So okay. I want to know, who's your biggest art crush?
Joan Mitchell.
I was hoping you were going to say that. I'm like, it has to be Joan Mitchell.
I don't even have to think about that.
I love it. What is a favorite place you like to travel, or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
Favorite place to travel would be London. Yeah,
it's a good one.
Often, yeah.
What film or book has inspired you greatly?
This is a very tough one. So can I have two? One is Quiet by Susan Cain, and the other one is Of Human Bondage by Somerset Maugham.
Have to look those up. Actually, I think I have Quiet. Is that the one about like being introverted?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I bought that book when I thought I was introverted, and then I realized I wasn't introverted, and I haven't read it, but I'm sure it would still give me a lot of insight for the introverted people in my life.
Yeah, actually, it helped me a lot. I picked it up to understand my son a little better and then figured out I'm understanding myself a little better too. So I recommend it if you have children who are quieter.
Okay. What is your favorite meal?
Pizza.
Pizza. Yum. Do you like Chicago style pizza, or like what's your favorite style pizza? Because it's pretty varied.
Yeah, I don't like deep dish, but that's not just, you know, that's great. Chicago pizza that's not deep dish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Pooja. So I always like to close with offering a space for you to give a shout out to someone who supports you in your work.
I would have to say the Hyde Park Arts Center. I'm a big proponent of this organization. I'm on their board, and I really believe in what they're doing, and they've helped me a lot when I was starting out as an artist.
Hmm. Okay. And finally, where can folks find more about you and your work?
Instagram is probably the best place. So my handle is Pooja Pitti.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing about your life and your journey, your transitions, your work. It's been just such a pleasure to get to know you a little bit more. And I can't wait to share this conversation with our community.
Thank you, Kaylin. Thank you for having me. And I really enjoyed our conversation as well.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.